Good morning. Today's daf in Sota is daf Beis. We begin the new Masechta this morning. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf is on the Zech Mishmach Liba, Gabriela Bas Shmuel. Masechta Sota is obviously coming right in the heels of Masechta Nazir, and that's a deliberate progression. And later this morning on today's daf Beis Amud Aleph, the Gemara is going to discuss why exactly it is Nazir followed by Sota. First, just by way of introduction, let's learn some psukim together. In Parshas Naso, Sefer Bamidbar, Perakei, so Pasuk Yud Aleph, the beginning of the fourth Aliyah, so the Torah starts off as follows: Ve'yedaber Hashem al Moshe l'amor, Daber b'nei Yisrael v'marta lehem. So this is the Parsha of Sota, beginning Ish Ish Kisista Ishto. So we have a man where his wife is going astray. The word sota is a derivative of the word lasatev, which means to go and basically not on the derech, but go off the derech, so to say. Mala b'mal, and there was some sort of rebellion that was done. V'shachavisho sashich v'zer v'nela me'enei isha. And she has relations with another man, Vinistra Vihinitma, and she secludes herself and she becomes defiled. Ve'edein ban, there was no witnesses. Vihi lo nispasa, and she wasn't forced, she wasn't violated. It was a willful act of infidelity. Va'avar lavruach kenam. Okay, so that's pasuk Yud Aleph, Yud Beis, and Yud Gimel. So the Torah first starts describing where basically she commits an act of infidelity. That is one version of a sota. That's one form of a sota. And then the Torah goes on to describe avar lavruch kina, or let's say the husband is jealous, v'kinesi ishto, and he warns his wife, v'hi nitma'a, and she becomes defiled, avar lavruch kina, or some sort of wave of jealousy, v'kinesi ishto, and he warns his wife, v'hi lo nitma'a, and she did not become defiled. In other words, Torah now seems to be describing where she may or may not have been infidel. So then the Torah goes on to describe how the next part of the process is going to be, where he's going to bring his wife to the Kohen, and I have a good feeling that you know what happens from that point going forward. The Torah is using sota really in one of two different contexts. One context the Torah is using sota is where a woman actually commits adultery, and it's known, it's yadua, there were witnesses to that. So she's described as a sota, because again, the word sota just simply means that she deviated, and she went off the derech, she went off the path, and she was with another man. And then there's the other form of a sota, which is really going to occupy most of our time in this Masechta, at least in the first couple parakim, and that's going to be where we don't know. The husband sees that she's talking with another man. The husband warns her, and she goes and secludes herself with a man, but it's not known whether or not she actually committed adultery. So that too is a sota, and that's where we're going to be occupying most of our time. I'm going to point out right now that these two types of sotas, where it's known whether it's unknown, so obviously they're dissimilar in the fact that one is known and one is not known. But here's where they're similar, and you're just going to keep pounding this point again and again throughout the Masechta. We'll see it already today. Is that even if it's unknown, if let's say the man doesn't know that his wife committed adultery, but there's strong suspicion that she did, and there was a process to get to this point of unknown. And the process is, as we're going to learn in the first Mishnah today, is that there was the kinui. Kinui is the term that we're going to be using to describe a warning, where he formally warned his wife, and there was a stira, and she secluded herself with that man that she was warned not to be with. So if there was kinui and there was stira, and that was both done formally, and we'll discuss the formality of it in the Mishnah. So at that point going forward, she's a sura. She cannot be with her husband. She's forbidden from her husband. They're still married. They're still husband and wife. But she's a surah. She's forbidden to him because they went through the formal process of kinu and stira. So even though this sota that we're going to be describing and that we're going to be spending most of our time discussing is where we don't know that she actually committed adultery, there were no witnesses who saw the actual act of adultery, but nevertheless, as long as there was a formal process that brought us to this point of uncertainty, she is going to be forbidden to her husband. That's just the one point that we're going to accentuate today, the one point that we can hopefully walk away from today, is this idea that A sota really comes in two forms. It comes in the form of what's called sota vadai, where she's definitely a sota, where she definitely committed adultery. And the other one is where we don't know. But in the stage of we don't know, there's going to be a time where she's going to be asur to her husband. Now, in the second form of sota where we don't know, well, that's where the parsha continues. We're going to bring her to the kohen. She's going to drink the mesota, and that will determine. But until that point in time, she is asur to her husband. With that stated, let's start with the Mishnah.
Was he ever done?
That's a good question. I don't know. I don't know. Historical counts, I don't know. But we're gonna see Bryce's over the course of this Masechta that describe, but okay.
The mere jealousy of the husband doesn't do it.
We're gonna see.
Go to the Kohen and say something.
Right? No. We'll see. We're learning. Hamakana liishto, a man warns his wife. Again, the word kinoi is used in the Torah. It's used here in the Mishnah. Rashi, in fact, says the Mishnah by design used the word kinoi as it's used in the Torah. Hamakana liishto, so a man warns his wife. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, mekane la al pishnayim, umashka al piyedechad. So according to Rabbi Eliezer, the kinoi, the warning, has to be done al pishnayim. It has to be done with two witnesses. Meaning, like I said, there's got to be a formal process to get to the point where she's a sota. So step one of the formal process is that there's going to be a warning, and the warning is going to be done in front of two witnesses. Now she's officially warned. Now, to get to the point where she's going to be drinking the mesota, so there has to be two steps. Step one is kinui, warning, and step two is stira, where she secludes herself with that man. So in terms of the seclusion, so that the Mishnah says, according to Rabbi Eliezer, only needs to be done with one witness. Or it doesn't even have to be done with one witness. It could be done even by the husband himself. Meaning the husband himself could say, I officially warned her, I warned in front of two witnesses, and she secluded herself and I saw it. I saw the seclusion. According to Rabbi Eliezer, now that's enough. Now she is a sota. Again, we don't know what happened, but she's now a sota. She's now a sota to her husband, and the next time that she'll be permitted to her husband is only after she drinks the mesota, and that's, of course, if the test checks out. Rabbi Yoshua, Omer Mekanel al Pishnayim. Rabbi Yoshua is of the opinion that no, that the warning has to be done with two, umashka al Pishnayim, and the drinking of the water, meaning the stira, the seclusion of herself with that man that she was warned not to be with, is done in front of two witnesses. That, according to Rabbi Yoshua, that's the accepted halacha, is that the formal process requires witnesses for both kinui and stira. So for both step one and two, the warning and the seclusion has to be done in front of two witnesses. Ketz Mekanala, the Mishnah actually goes now through the exact verbiage of how he warns her. Omer La, Bifnei Shlaim, he says in front of two witnesses, Al Tadabri, Mishploni, I do not want you speaking to such a man. And he actually identifies which man he does not want her speaking with. V'dibri Imo. Now, when he says don't speak to her, obviously talking is not the issue, but and the Mishnah just wants to highlight that point. V'dibri Imo. So let's say they talk, even though the warning was don't talk. So Adaini Muteras Labesa Muteras Lechol B'Truma. At that point in time, she's still Muteras to her husband. She's still allowed to eat Truma. Meaning, had he be a Kohen and she'd be married to this Kohen, she'd still be allowed to eat Truma. Nechneses Imo Labesa Seser. However, when she goes and secludes herself with this man, who she was warned not to be with, Vishasei Mokedei Truma, and they were there in the room for the duration that there could be a Bia, Asur Labesa V'Asur Lechol B'Truma. She is going to be forbidden. She'll be forbidden to her husband. She'll be forbidden to eat truma, the imes, and if this man dies, chalitzas v'lomis yabemis. So then chalitza will be done with this woman, but not yibum. And as Rashi points out, the Gemara is going to discuss that later in terms of why chalitza and no yibum. Rashi points out over here in the Mishnah that really, once we get to the point of suffix sota, so really there are three isurim involved, right? The Mishnah really highlights two isurim, but really there are three isurim. Rashi points out this is going to be based on psukim. We're going to see this later in the Masechta, but once a woman is determined to be a sota, once we go through the formal process of having had been warned, having secluded herself with the man, according to Rabbi Yoshua, both are done in front of two witnesses, so now there's isur. And as Rashi points out, there are actually three isurim. Itza, number one, she cannot be with her husband. She's forbidden to her husband. Again, they're still married, but she's forbidden. Itza, number two, she can't eat truma, meaning if she was an Ashes Kohen, so that now disqualifies her from being a from eating truma. She is now that's Itza, number two. And Itza, number three, says Rashi, the Boel. She can't be with the alleged paramour. That person is going to be usher to her in the event that he dies or he divorces her. So she cannot go to the man that she allegedly had relations with. That's going to be the third Isser. So Laba'al, Laba'al, and Latruma, those are three separate Isserim. Let's start with the Gemara. Mechti, Tanim, and Ezer Salik. The Gemara now is looking at the progression of Masechtas. We're going to take a larger view of the Masechtas that we just covered. Michti Tanami Nazir Salak. Yesterday we finished Masechta Nazir. And my Tana Dekatana Sota. So why is it that we're transitioning from the Masechta of Nazir to the Masechta of Sota? I have a good feeling that you already know the answer, but here the Gemara articulates. Kid the Rebbe. So the Gemara says it's based on the teaching of Rebbe Titania. We learned in the Brisa of Rebbe Omer. Laman is Mecha Parsha Nazir Parsha Sota. In the Torah, the two are juxtaposed one next to the other. And it's coming to teach us that anyone who sees a sota in her disheveled form, so the proper response would be, yeah, but wine probably caused that. Wine had an active role in her straying from her husband and her behaving in such a non-sneous manner. So the proper response is, you know what? No wine for me. And so that's a natural progression to go from Sota to that of Nazir. So the Gemara says, okay, but that's a progression to go from Sota to Nazir. What did we just do? We just went from Nazir to Sota. So Velisne Sota Vahagalisne Nazir. Okay, good. So why are we not reversing the order of the Masechtas? So I did the Tanik Suvas V'Tanah Hamad Yatanah Nedarim V'Tanah Nedarim. So the Gemara goes and it gives now basically the progression of Seder Nashim. Meaning, what was the first Masechta that we did? We did Ksuvos. In Ksuvos, what did we learn? We learned the Perek about Nedarim. So we go now from Ksuvos to Nedarim. That's a natural progression. So because, again, in Ksuvos, there was a Perek that dealt with Nedarim. And then Tana Nedarim, but I did the Tana Nedarim, Tana Nazir, the Damal Nedarim. And now, after having learned Nedarim, so Nazir basically is an offshoot of Nedarim, because Nazir is an Eder. And so it is now a normal progression to go from Nedarim to Nazir. It's almost like 2A and 2B. Vikitani Sota Kidarebi. And now, as long as now that we're learning Nazir, so then Sota is a wonderful fit as well. I already gave away a secret. I enjoy giving away the secret told to me by Rabbi Kornfeld, and that is that you'll notice it's true by every Seder in Shas. There are six of them, and every Seder in Shas, so the order of the Masechtas follow the length of Perakim, the number of Perakim. It's a great rule. It's correct. Meaning, you'll look at the beginning of every Seder, so all the larger Masechtas, when I say the size, largeness, I'm talking about the number of Perakim. So it always goes from largest to smallest, and it's consistent. And look in every Seder. And in order for this to work, and it works, so you have to treat the Babas as all one big Masechta. Meaning Baba Kama, Baba Ba, Baba Mesir, Baba Bas are really one large Masechta of 30 Prakim, and that's at the front end of Seder Nezikin. So in Seder Nashim, which is we're learning, Seder Nashim's got the fewest number of Masechtas. Seder Nashim has seven Masechtas. So it's the smallest number. But in Seder Nashim, it's the same thing. You start off with Ksuvas. Ksuvas has the largest number of Parakim, then followed by Nedarim, then followed by Nazir, then followed by Sota. You see, but I'm not. This is not a rebuff of the Gemara. This is both are true. I mean, both explanations we just said are true. The number of Perakim, and also thematically how every Masechta treats the topic, so they play a role in the order. In Sota and Nazir, it's a tie. Right, Nazir that we just learned has 9 Perakim. Sota, which we're learning right now, also has 9 Perakim. So, you know, on the tie, it really could have gone either way. Could have been Sota Nazir, could have been Nazir Sota. So that explains why the Gemara has to give an additional reason in terms of why is it Nazir Sota and not, as the Torah lays out, Sota followed by Nazir. It's a good rule to know.
The work was set by Rabbi Yudah.
Yes, yes. Okay, with that stated, let's go on now. We're in the two dots. We're right in the middle of Beza Amud Aleph, HaMekane. Okay, you look carefully at the first word of the Mishnah. The Mishnah lays out a husband warning his wife. But in terms of the language that's used, the Mishnah was written with pinpoint accuracy, and it says Hamikane. Hamikane means if the husband warned his wife. What does that indicate? The Gemara says Hamikane Dieved Lachatzchila Lo. So it's indicating that the husband really shouldn't do it. Meaning he has an avenue of doing so, it's within his right of doing so, but he really shouldn't do so. So Kasava Taniti Danos Alakanos, and it must be that the author of our Mishnah is of the opinion that one should not be Mekane. Meaning the Torah affords a husband an opportunity to warn his wife, but really that's on the books. But then, if you will, it's the hashkafa, it's a little bit more than hashkafa. Gemara uses the language of aser. But the hashkafa is that the husband shouldn't use it. If you take a look at Rashi over here, also Lakanos, so Rashi writes, maybe atzmali de tagar, because nothing good's going to come out of the warning. Meaning, obviously, her behavior is not justifiable, but then when you take it to the next level, and he starts now warning his wife, so as Rashi points out, it just nothing's good. It's going to come out. It's going to lead to fighting. Lidei tagar ve'esishto lidei nivol. And his wife now, if we go down this road, if we head down this road of warning, so then his wife is going to be going through the process of sota, which is nivol. It's going to make her disgusting. Ve'afil hi tahara, and it could be that she's tahara. And we're going to go through fighting and nivol, and so it's not going to be good. So again, it's got to hold two thoughts in your head at the same time. The husband has the opportunity to do so; it's within his right of doing so, and he shouldn't do so. Okay, right. That's Amar Rav Shmuel Barav Yitzchak Ki Hava Pasach Reish Lakish Besota. When Reish Lakish would begin teaching Masech to Sota, Amar Hachi. So this is what he would say: Eim Zavgin La Adam Isha El Lefi Maasav. What woman do you get? You get a one that you deserve. Meaning that the wife that you get, the quality of wife that you're going to get, is going to be based on your actions. Shenemar ki lo yanuch shevet harasha al garal tzadikim. Gemara quotes a pasuk from Tehillim. The pasuk says that the shevet harasha, shevet harasha over here is a reference to the woman. Shevet obviously literally means a tribe, it can mean a stick. But the shevet harasha al garal tzadikim won't fall into the lot of tzadikim. So it won't be that you're going to get a wife that's not going to be compatible and a good match for the husband in terms of tzaddik versus rasha. And so so Reish Lakish basically says, you know, you could point to the wife and you could find fault with the wife, but before finding fault with the wife, first point to the husband and say, you know, magiyalo. It's to a certain degree, it's a match. It's difficult for a Kadosh Baruch Hu to create zivugim. It's as difficult for a Kadosh Baruch Hu to create a zivug as it is for a Kadosh Baruch Hu to split the sea. Shenemar Elokim Oshiv Yechidim Beisa. Kadosh Baruch Hu took the individuals back home. Motzi Asirim Bekoshros. He took those who were imprisoned and he brought them out Bekoshros. Bekoshros, if you take a look at Rashi, what is this a reference to? This is a reference to Yitzias Mitzrayim. And how do we know that it's a reference to Yitzias Mitzrayim? You take a look at Rashi, the first long line, first wide line towards the bottom. Rashi writes, Hotzit Yisrael mi Mitzrayim b'chodesh kasher. So Rashi writes over here that Bekoshros is a reference to the month of Nisan, best month of the year. Lochama v'lotzina. It's not too hot, it's not too cold. Makish zivug yechidim Yitzias Mitzrayim. And you see the hekesh between the marriage of a husband and wife. That's the first part of the pasuk. Moshiv yechidim besa. Besa of the word bais means the creation of a house, husband and wife, to that of Yitzias Mitzrayim. Take a look at the Bach. Over here, the Bach points out that the Gemara in... Gemara in Sanhedrin learns out the word kosher a little bit differently than what we're learning now. But anyway, the formation of husband and wife is as difficult to Kadosh Baruch Hu as Kriyas Yamsuf. Often this Gemara is quoted. You're going to hear it at Shevar Brachos. You're going to hear it at Achasna. Exactly what the Gemara means, that's not perfectly clear. Right? How difficult was it for a Kadosh Baruch Hu to do Kriyas Yamsuf? He's a Kadosh Baruch Hu. So, And then creating a
understanding.
Huh? It's from our and it's
yeah, correct, correct, correct. In other words, right. From our perspective, of course, it's difficult. But for Kadosh Baruch Hu, it's not difficult. So it's difficult for him to make zivugim. That I totally understand. But anyway, you'll hear this all the time, and you'll hear various explanations that are given. In the meantime, let's go on. Ini, the Gemara says, is this correct? V'hamar of Yehuda Merav. So the Gemara says, you know, there's another statement which is also often quoted, which is Arba'im Yom Kodem Yetzias HaVlad, 40 days before the formation of a fetus, Baskol Yosef Almeris. Out comes the Baskol, and the Baskol says, Bas Ploni Laploni. Bais Ploni Laploni. Sada Ploni Laploni. So who are you going to marry? Where are you going to live? Your properties that you're going to own. So that's all predetermined. And Rashi over here writes, in terms of predetermination. So take a look at the Rashi. Fundamental Rashi. So Rashi writes, Mi have a zivug lefi Rashi v'zchus. So the Gemara is really challenging the idea that, you know what you're going to get in terms of a wife? You're going to get something that matches you. You're a Rashi, you're going to get a Rashi. You're going to get, you're a tzaddik, you're going to get a tzaddikus. So Rashi points out, what the Gemara is really bothered by is that everything is determined before you're born. And before you're born, you're not yet labeled as a Rashi or as a tzaddik. Rashi writes, V'hami kod mitzir asam she'ino derisho v'zichuso. Before you're born, you have the choice to be a tzaddik or a rasha, machriz and a zugo, and yet your shidduch is already going to be determined. The imtar ma'akol goy lufanav ha'kol b'day shamayim chutz mi'yir shamayim k'dam ha'masechef nida. So, and Rashi quotes the Gemara Nida that says that everything is up to Kadosh Baruch Hu except for Yir Shamayim. Kedamar b'Maseches Nida, Malach HaMamun al HaRayon Otzotipo Mevil Lifnei HaMakom. There's an angel that's appointed over conception, and he brings the just fertilized egg to Kadosh Baruch Hu. Kav Yachol. V'Amal Lefan of Tipa Zu Matei Alav. And what's going to happen? So Gibor Chalosh Chacham Otipe Shashirani, and everything is laid out. Strong, weak, smart, not smart, wealthy, poor. Aval tzadik v'rasha lo kamarle. But obviously, the one thing that is not predetermined is whether the person is going to be a tzadik or rasha. That's bechira chavshi. That's fundamental. And the ein zeh bidei shamayim, that's not up to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And so now, it's fundamental Rashi, and so now basically what we have is a bit of an issue. Because on one hand, Reish Lakish says, you know what you're going to get in life? You're going to get something that fits you, that matches you. In terms of tzidkus, in terms of rishus. Now it's difficult to understand because before you even came into this world, it was already predetermined. And what's not predetermined is whether you're going to be a tzaddik or rasha. So how does that work? So the Gemara says, Lokasha habezivik rishon habezivik sheni. So the Gemara says, okay. So another line of Gemara that's quoted all the time, and that is the distinction between your first zivik and your second zivik. In terms of your first zivik, so that's mazel. That's something that is beyond your control, and it's not necessarily going to be up to you. And it could be in terms of tzidkus and rishos, it may not necessarily be a match. Okay. God in his infinite wisdom obviously made this decision what's best for you, but it may not be a match in terms of tzidkus and rishus. And in terms of zivuk sheni, so that's strictly lefi masa. That's according to your actions. Because at that point in time now, that wasn't your, as we would like to call, that's not your basher, that's not the person that Kadosh Baruch Hu chose for you. That's your own choosing, but in that realm, in that department, so now it's going to be a match of tzidkus and rishus. Okay, the Rabbi Lazar Omer Mekanel Al Pishnayim V'chulei. Okay, we continue now in the Gemara. We're towards the bottom of Beis Amud Aleph at the two dots, and now we're going to get into this machlokas of the Mishnah between Rabbi Yoshua and Rabbi Lazar. The truth of the matter is, the Gemara is going to really focus on a different point altogether. Rabbi Lazar Omer Mekanel Al Pishnayim V'chulei. Again, let's just remind each other. There's a formal process of taking a wife and bringing her to the point of being a sota. And the formality is a two-step process of a warning and seclusion. According to Rabbi Yeshua of our Mishnah, a warning is done in front of two witnesses, and the seclusion is done in front of two witnesses as well. The Gemara now is going to point out, what if there is actually more information than just that? What if there was a warning, and there was seclusion, and then there was actual Edom that saw that they had relations? The Gemara goes on to point out, Ad kan lo pligei lebikinah v'stira. The machlokus over here is only as it relates to warning and seclusion. Aval bituma, but let's say now we're going to go one step further, where they actually saw tuma. Eid echad mehemen. a unique phenomena in halacha, almost unprecedented, and that is one witness is going to be given credibility. We know throughout halacha, we're going to see this time and again. We get to Sanhedrin, we get to Makos, we're going to see this time and again. So in order to substantiate anything in halacha, so you need two witnesses. And meanwhile, here's going to be it's almost a unique circumstance in halacha where one witness is going to be given credibility.
There were three instances. One is the wife of somebody who died faster.
Aguna.
This one, is that one?
There's I don't think there's a third one.
Sota
and Aguna. Aguna. Aguna may not be a perfect match in terms of fitting into this category. Aguna may be in a category all to itself. Yes. One witness saw the two of them actually have relations.
So then she's not a
sota. Oh. So she is a sota, and she's a sota who's not going to be drinking the mesota. Right, correct. Meaning again, we go back to what I said in the very beginning of this morning. When we talk about sota, you have to lay down two categories. There's a sota who is known that she committed adultery, and there's a sota who's not known. Most of our mesachtem, most of our discussion is going to be based on the second category, where we don't know, but enough process was done, enough formal warning seclusion was done, where she's asked to her husband. And then there's another sota, which is we know what happened. And here, we know what happened. That knowledge can be created even by one witness. So the Betumah Eidecha Mehemen. Now, when we say one witness over here, let's just emphasize that it means that she went through the process of warning and seclusion. And then on top of that, now there was also one witness who actually saw the act of Bia. In such a scenario, that one witness is going to be given the credibility where now she's known to be a Sota. And halachically, what does that mean? If the one witness didn't see her, she'd still be usher to her husband. But now what it means is she doesn't drink the mesota. Because who drinks the mesota? Only someone where there's a strong suspicion that she committed adultery, but we don't know. Here, we know. We know she committed adultery, even though it was one witness who saw. Utana nami edecha no me'ani reisi shinit meis. So lo haisa shose, that if one witness saw that she was metame, that she actually had relations with this man, she would not drink the mei sota. Because at that point, with that one witness's testimony, is going to be enough evidence to say that she committed adultery, and therefore she doesn't drink the mei sota. So Midah writes, and how do we know that this is so? That one witness is going to be believed to Tana Rabbanan. So here and now, we're going to go through a lengthy discussion in the Gemara in terms of how we arrived at this conclusion. This is the conclusion. This is the halacha. That one witness is going to be believed in terms of Eidei Tumah, actually seeing the wife and this man have relations. But how do we get to this point? So the Gemara starts off. The Eid Ein Ba, Torah quotes the Psukim by Sota. The Torah says, Eid Ein Ba. Now, the word aid is in the singular. And one could understand that the word aid means one witness. But that's not correct. Bishnaim akasa medabi. The Torah, when the Torah says the word aid, the Torah means a pair of witnesses, a set of witnesses. Or maybe it only means one witness. But the Gemara says, immediately rejects that. Tamalamar, lo yalkum aid echad ba'ish. Parsha shoftim. The Torah says that one witness cannot testify against another. Now, if the Torah would have just simply said aid without saying the word echad, wouldn't I have known? Aid means one. Aid is in the singular. So, matam alamra echad zebana av. So, basically, what the Torah is now setting up for us is, here's the definition. When you see the word aid by itself, aid means two. By virtue of the fact that the Torah in one place has to go out of its way to say Eid Echad, so that means that normally Eid by itself means two. It's a binyan of. Kol makom shenemar Eid harei kan shnayim. That every time you see the word Eid, it's really two. Ashi yifar lecha kasov Echad, unless the Torah goes out of its way to say one. V'amar Rachmanah. So now with that formula, so let's go back to our parsha. The Torah says, Eid Ein Ba. There are no two witnesses. Again, the word Eid, which when it goes with no adjective afterwards, always defaults to two. So the Torah is now telling us there are no two witnesses. And in this context, what does that mean? V'amar Rachmanah treleis ba, el echad. The Torah says there was a warning. and there was a seclusion, and there were no two witnesses. Okay. So that's in such a scenario, she's a sota. But again, remember, she's a sota suffik. She's a sota, but we don't know what happened. She's going to go through the Kohen. She's going to go through the process of mesota. And there were no two witnesses. So that means now let's scale back. So if there weren't two witnesses, so now she's a sota suffik. But what if there was one witness? Oh, so if there was one witness, she's no longer a sota suffik. She's now a sota vadai. We know for sure she's a sota. She's not drinking the mesota. Just give me 1 second. Vehi lo nispasa asura, and the only thing now that needs verification is that she wasn't forced, she wasn't violated, she was a willing participant. Fine, that one witness is going to be the determinant of whether or not she was a willing participant. And again, normally when we talk about intent, what do you normally need in terms of intent? You need edim, you need hasra, you need a warning. But over here, there's enough contextual clues. There was a kinui, there was a warning by the husband, there was stira, there was seclusion. There's enough contextual clues where with one witness, with the testimony of one witness, we know that this was not a violation, that she was a willing participant. Yeah, go ahead. Yes, in other words, even with this one witness, he has to be, right, same criteria. Right, third parak of Sanhedrin, you go through the third parak, learn exactly what the criteria are, and yes, and this one witness has to match that criteria. Right, and that's a good point, though, because when Hedy raised earlier that there's another place in Halacha where we believe one witness, so that's by Egunas Isha. That's by the allowance of a woman to remarry after her husband went off missing. There, it's not the same. You don't need the same criteria of Edim that you do over here. So that's a good point. Okay, now, the Gemara is going to challenge, meaning we're going to spend a little bit of time now challenging this conclusion that we arrived at. The conclusion is correct. That when you have kinui, when you have stira, and then you have one witness testifying, so that now establishes her to be a sota vadai. She is definitively a sota. She's not going to drink the mesota, all based on the fact that the Torah says, eid ein ba. And the Gemara now, for just a little bit, is going to spend some time discussing, and what if the Torah didn't say that? So we were working with a havamina that the aid of a sota is really one. So the Gemara says, and now what are you telling me? Again, the havamina would have been that even if with one witness, it's not going to be enough. So the Gemara says, so if there's nobody, so how is she going to be usher? It's the sakadat kamina eidain ba ein ne'eman ba. So so when it says that one witness, there's not one witness, what the Torah means is that we're not going to believe one witness. Ein ne'eman ba ve'alamai by adi ikatrei. So the Gemara says, now really, so you think that the Torah is trying to tell us that we're not going to believe one witness, and you mean to tell me that we're only going to believe the actual tumah occurred if there are two witnesses? So then, if that were true, l'shakramine. So at that point in time, Torah wouldn't have to say anything. Da'asya davar davar mimamon. And then we would have just defaulted to the regular rules of Eidos. What do you need? Two witnesses. V'ana yadana mida dehava kol Eidos shebetorah. And I would have known that this is just like any kind of testimony in the Torah. So it's the rechsaka dav chamin amina sotashani. So the Gemara says, no. By sota, we're going to defend the pshat, which, again, we're not concluding by this pshat, but right now we're just explaining why the Torah wouldn't maybe have to go out of its way to tell me that I'm only going to believe two witnesses and not one. Again, that's not the halacha, but this is just a Gemara arguing the point. Because I might have thought that when it comes to sota, she's different. The raglayim ledavar, sharei kinala v'nistara. Because look, yet kinu yet stira letamein ba eid echad. So therefore, we already have enough contextual clues that tell us that she committed adultery, and that's why I would have thought that one witness would be credible, although again, I say under my breath, one witness is credible, but I would have thought that one witness is credible, and maybe that's why the Torah would have to go out of its way to tell me, no, one witness is not credible, you rather need two witnesses. So the Gemara says, I could still make the argument and say that you need two witnesses for her. So the Gemara says, really? you're really going to think that that's correct? The Torah says that she wasn't violated. Mechlad asura. So well, the Torah is clearly telling us that she's forbidden. So saka das chamina. Again, the Gemara is saying that the havamina is a neman ba aid de ikatrei uvetrei nami he delo nispasa. Again, what I might have thought is that she that you're going to need two witnesses, and the two witnesses are actually there to confirm that she was not violated, that she committed the act of adultery willingly. So kamash malan, that's a chiddush. So again, the Torah, the Gemara just spent the last 10 lines just arguing the point that the Torah could not have left this this issue out of the Torah, and because we would have defaulted, and we would have said, without the Torah having written anything, we would have defaulted and said, no, you need two witnesses. And the reason why you need two witnesses is because in order to determine intent, that really she intended to commit adultery, and it was not just a, and it was not just a, she was not just violated. Okay, but that's not the halacha. The halacha is, as the Torah just concluded, that ve'ed ein ba, that in terms of the ed tuma, witnesses who see her committing adultery, so there weren't two witnesses, but one witness would be enough. And again, the an exception in halacha, whereby the sota, if you had kinui and you had stira, one witness is going to be the determinant that she actually committed adultery. From that point going forward, she is now sota, not in the category of sota safek, but rather in the category of sota vade. She committed adultery and all the consequences of such. She's aser to her husband, to the boel, to eat truma, the okay, she forfeits her ksuva. Okay, all those halachas kick in. Yeah. Rabbi Yoshua Amar Kana La Pishnayim. Excuse me. So, okay. We have two opinions in our Mishnah in terms of what is formal process of kinu and stira. Okay, opinion number one in our Mishnah is Rabbi Eliezer, who says that it's two witnesses for kinui, one witness for stira. And even that one witness for stira doesn't even have to be an objective witness. Could be the husband himself. Okay, that's Rabbi Eliezer Shita. And then we have Rabbi Yoshua Shita, and Rabbi Yoshua says no. Two for kinui and two for stira. Okay. Just an interesting question just to think about. Which is the more intuitive shita? Rabbi Eliezer or Rabbi Yoshua? Could argue. But in other words, without having us know this machlokas in the Mishnah, where would we have sided on this issue? Just by intuition alone. Okay. It would seem that Rabbi Eliezer is a bigger chiddush, because we're going through a formality. We're changing her status. She's going to go from a status of being a married woman who's permitted to her husband to a married woman who's not permitted to her husband. So we're going through a whole status change. I think the more intuitive position is Rabbi Yoshua, because Rabbi Yoshua says you want kinui, two witnesses. You want stira, you need two witnesses. Then and only then does she actually undergo a status change. According to Rabbi Eliezer, to get now from her being muteris to her being asura, one witness, and even more than that, even the husband himself, that's a chiddush. It's a big chiddush. But again, that's exactly Rabbi Eliezer's point. So by intuition, it would seem that Rabbi Eliezer would be the bigger chiddush. My time with Rabbi Yoshua. So and it's interesting that the Gemara. I raise this point first of all because hopefully it's food for thought. Yeah, and why doesn't exactly? And why doesn't the Gemara start with explaining Rabbi Eliezer Shita first? And why does the Gemara start off with explaining Rabbi Yoshua? Which A, in the order of the Mishnah, Rabbi Eliezer comes before Rabbi Yoshua, and B, Rabbi Eliezer really is a bigger chiddush. So it is interesting that the Gemara starts with Rabbi Yoshua. My time with Rabbi Yoshua Amakra, the Torah says ba ba. The Torah says the word ba multiple occasions. I'm sorry. I think I'm wrong about that. Yeah, I'm wrong. Okay. Torah says ve'ed ein ba, and it says that on one occasion. So ba v'lo bikinui. So Rabbi Yeshua says that the eid ein ba, you do not have a set of witnesses, and which means that in order to bring it to the point of being a sota, you need a set of witnesses. Again, the only time you don't need a set of witnesses, the only one works, is only for the tumah. But for the kinuim, for the stira, you need a pair for each. And that's it, and that's Shitas Rabbi Yeshua. Bava lo bikinui, bava lo bistira. Vi Rabbi Eliezer Omer, bava lo bikinui. And Rabbi Eliezer says no. The word ba, it says it only once. Okay, corrected myself. It says it only once. And that's only for the kinui. It's only for the warning. Ve'ema bava lo bistira. So the Gemara says, okay, according to Rabbi Eliezer, the Torah says eight ein ba. There weren't a pair of witnesses, which means that you need a pair of witnesses. It's a two-step process. One is kinui, and step two is istira. So now, what brought Rabbi Eliezer to the conclusion that where do you need the pair? You need it by kinui. Can't you make the argument that by kinui, maybe you don't need two witnesses? And really, it's only by istira you need two witnesses. So the Gemara says, no. So the Gemara says no, because stira is more connected with the actual tuma, and just even without the psukim, meaning that's obviously more intuitive. Meaning, when did the tuma happen? The tuma happened when they were soser, when they secluded themselves. But aside from the intuition, meaning, and the Torah also says it, v'nistra v'hinit ma. So you see that stira and tuma are connected. Now, by tumah, we already established you don't need two witnesses by tumah. So by stira, this is the argument for Rabbi Eliezer. I don't need two witnesses for stira as well. And so therefore, where do I need two witnesses according to Rabbi Eliezer? By the kina, by the kinui, by the warning. The Gemara says, kinui nami ishkis l'tumah. Gemara says, really, if it's a psukim connecting, we can also connect kinui and tumah. The Torah says the kinei sishtav he nitma. Torah says he warned her and she violated. So you see, kinui and tumah are connected. So hamid rachmana ba. So the Gemara says, yeah, but we have the word ba, and the word ba tells us that at one point in time we need two witnesses. So the Gemara says, amar reita, good. Now, good. You need two witnesses. But why did you decide, Rabbi Eliezer, that the two witnesses are needed by the kinui, not by the stira? Again, you can make arguments that the two witnesses are needed by the kinui, or the two witnesses are needed by the stira. What brought you to this conclusion? Mistabra stira difa shekain osrasa ketuma. Gemara says, If anything, I would say that logically, stira is more important in terms of changing her status, because it forbids her. Meaning, the kinui is step one, but she's not forbidden to her husband until step two, until the stira. So the adrab, kinui adr shekain ikar garam la. So the Gemara says, again, you can make another argument, which is the kinui is more significant, because what gets the ball rolling? Meaning, what gets her to the where does it all begin? The beginning point is kinui. So kinui is the beginning point. So that's why I need the two witnesses. So ilav stira kinui miika. So the Gemara says, okay, but it's a two step, and without stira, there's no kinui. Meaning, the kinui does not have any significance until stira. So the ilav kinui stira mayahani. So the Gemara says, okay, but without a warning, the stira doesn't do anything. Also, so basically, the Gemara admits. I need they need each other. The kinui needs the stira needs the kinui. And again, back to our original question. So according to Rabbi Eliezer, I need a set of witnesses for one of the two. And again, now the decision has to be made by Rabbi Eliezer, which step? Is it step one or is it step two? And they're both important. They're both critical in terms of establishing her to be a sota. So once again, back to square one. Afilo hachi stira adifa de aschalta de tomahi. So the Gemara says, ultimately, the argument of stira being more connected to tuma is ultimately going to be the deciding argument. Tuma, again, you don't need two witnesses. Stira, you don't need two witnesses, according to Rabbi Eliezer. And that's why the one place where the Torah demands that you have two witnesses is the kinui, is the warning at the very beginning. Okay, so again in our Mishnah, we have two shitos in our Mishnah. Rabbi Eliezer says that I need two witnesses for the kinui, not for the stira. And Rabbi Yeshua in our Mishnah says that I need two witnesses for both the kinui and the stira. Okay. Masis and Doloki Aitana Detanya. Gemara now points out there is a third shita. Okay, it's kind of a third shita. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Mishum, Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda says, in the name of Rabbi Eliezer. So it's kind of a third shita, but it's really Rabbi Eliezer, just another version of Rabbi Eliezer. Hamekan l'ishta mekan al pi edechad or al pi atzma. In terms of the warning, so you can warn your wife using either one witness or using yourself. And it's it, 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 We could have asked this question at the beginning of today's daf. If you can warn using yourself, why would the Mishnah even need to say Eidechad? Okay, it's a question. So Umashil Apishnayim, and in terms of getting to the point of being her being a sota, meaning the stira, that you need two witnesses. So here it's Rabbi Eliezer, but flip from our Mishnah. In our Mishnah, we have Rabbi Eliezer demanding two for the kinui and one for the stira. Here in this version of Rabbi Eliezer, flip it. One for the kinui, two for the stira. Hey, Shiva Chacham l'diver Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda in l'diver sof. And the Chachamim turn to Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda and say, "Come on." Now that's not a perfect translation of the Gemara, but that basically is what the Chachamim are saying to Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda, meaning you really the whole sota ball is going to start with just a warning of one witness, and not even one witness, even the husband himself. It's you're going to make a mess of all this. Ain ladav herself. There's no end. Meaning, all you need now in order for her to start the sota ball, start the sota process, is for just the husband to have a bad moment and say, you know, that guy, don't seclude yourself with that guy. So now, according to Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, she's now in step one of being a sota. No.
No, like the husband could just accuse her of something, but two witnesses are there and say, I already warned her.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So in other words, so the Chachamim's response to this version is, come on. Which again, I know that's not exactly what he's saying, but that's basically what he's saying. Ein l'davrasof my time and Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda amakra ba v'lo b'stira. So here we go again now with the Gemara's progression of how do I know that the two witnesses are needed for the stira? But now the argument now is going to go in the other direction. Previously we argued why the two witnesses are needed by kinui, but we're in the second version of Rabbi Eliezer, so now we're going to argue why do I need the two witnesses by the stira? So here we go again. My time at the Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, Amakra, Ba, Ba, Velo, Bestira, Veima, Ba, Velo, Bekinui. How do I know? Maybe the two witnesses are by kinui. Kinui, it's Kishal Tumah. The Gemara says no, because kinui is connected with Tumah. Dechsi, Bekinesi, Shavi, Hinitma. So the Gemara argues no, stira nami, it's Kishal Tumah. What are you talking about? Stira is also connected to Tumah. So the Gemara says no. The stira over there is telling us what is a seclusion, meaning how long do they have to seclude themselves in order for this to be considered seclusion? The amount of time of bia. So kedei tumah hudas. That's coming to tell us the amount of time of bia. That's why the Torah is connecting stira and tumah. Hey, Shiva Chacham l'diver Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda, ain l'davar self. So the Chachamim say to Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda, this is just untenable. So the Gemara says, my nihu. The Gemara says, what does that mean? The Zimnan delo kani va'amar kanai. The Gemara says, because maybe he actually never warned her. And then, after two witnesses come and said, you know, she secluded herself with that man, the husband can now step up and say, and I told her not to. Okay, so ain l'davar self. Hala mishna sena yesh l'davar self. What bothers the Gemara now, it's really a technical issue, is that this reaction of the Chachamim, how come this reaction of the Chachamim isn't laid down in our Mishnah as well? Meaning in our Mishnah, granted according to Rabbi Eliezer, it flips to go from two witnesses for kinui and only one witness for stira. But still, you can make the same argument, ein l'davar sof. Zimnan, the Gemara gives an example. Zimnan, de lo istater. Maybe she didn't seclude herself with the man. The Amar istater. And the husband can now charge his wife. You seclude yourself with that man. And I warned you in front of two witnesses not to do that, and you did anyway. I'm Rav Yitzchak bar Yosef. I'm Rav Yochanan. Af ledivrei Rabbi Yosef Rav Yehuda ein ledavar sof. Even according to Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda's position, ein ledavar sof. Meaning, you're right. The point could have been made in our Mishnah. The point is made in the Braisa. It's by both. Alpha Divra Avios Rav Yehuda Velomi Baila Mishnah Seinu Adar Abba Mishnah Seinu Ika Iker. So the Gemara says, now the truth of the matter is that why is the recoil of the Chachamim put down on the Braisa? Shouldn't it be back on the Mishnah? So Hasam Leika Iker. Elai Yidmar Hachi Yidmar. The Gemara says, you're right. Here's how we're going to understand it. I'm Rav Yitzchak bar Rav Yosef. I'm Rav Yochanan. Div Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda. V'af l'mishnah senu. Ein l'davar sof. Right? They're going to add a vav. V'af l'mishnah senu. Ein l'davar sof. Exactly correct. For Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda's position, for our Mishnah's position, Rabbi Eliezer's position is so difficult because now that one witness is believed, and it can even be just a husband, ein l'davar sof. It really is no. There's no end. A man shouldn't say to his wife, "Don't seclude yourself with that man." Excuse me. should not seclude. Because maybe the halacha falls like Rav Yosi, Rav Yehuda. Da amar kinui al pi atzmo umista kinui al pi atzmo umistasha veleka ina mesot lemivdika vekasar ilavei isura de la olam. So the problem is that maybe the halacha falls like Rav Yosi, Rav Yehuda. According to Rav Yosi, Rav Yehuda, a warning is considered a valid warning, even if it's done by one witness, even if it's only done by the husband. And if, it's a big if the halacha were following Rav Yosi, Rav Yehuda, you have now started the sota process by giving her by issuing the warning. Now, in the next step is that if she secludes herself in front of two witnesses, she's going to be usher to the husband forever. And bizmaninu, and nowadays we don't have a base of mikdash, so it's an unresolved safek, and she'll be perpetually usher to her husband. So therefore, her husband should not warn his wife because for fear that maybe the halacha is like Rav Yosi, Rav Yehuda. It's very interesting, by the way, because the halacha goes like Rabbi Yeshua, not like Rabbi Eliezer, and B, this isn't even Rabbi Eliezer of our Mishnah, it's Rabbi Eliezer of our Braisa, which is even now like one step even further removed, and the Gemara now is being concerned for this Shita. So that in of itself, that's interesting, but okay. In other words, the halach. Yes, I mean this is brought down in Shulchan Aruch, but why? That part's a little tricky. But because the halacha falls like Rabbi Yeshua, you need two witnesses for both steps. Okay, just as a quick recap, we started the new masechta today, the first daf. We made the very clear delineation at the beginning of the shiur today. There's a sota vada, there's a sota safek. Most of our attention is going to be focused on the sota safek. Sota safek is a two-step process of kinu and stira. Machlokus in the Mishnah, do I need two witnesses by both? Rabbi Yeshua says yes, Rabbi Eliezer says no. Rabbi Eliezer says I only need two witnesses by kinu and not by stira. The brisa we learned later this morning says that the another version of Rabbi Eliezer where it's flipped, I need two witnesses for the stira, but I only one witness or even the husband himself being there for the warning is sufficient grounds to start the ball rolling. And the Gemara concluded today with a warning to us husbands. Be careful. Don't warn her for fear that maybe the halacha falls like the second version of Rabbi Eliezer.